Shabbat Shalom. It almost feels like I should be saying Chag Sameach, since it is, after all, Shabbat Thanksgiving. I don't know about at your house, but at my house, it's like first we have Thanksgiving and then we have second Thanksgiving. Once more with feeling. Friday night is the real Thanksgiving, as far as I can tell, at our house. Anyway, it's actually, of course, the Shabbat of Vayishlach, and our Parsha can be found on page 198 in the Eitz Chaim. I think that's the book that everyone has. So, my goodness, what a Parsha this is. We continue the story of Yaakov, who we met last week, dreaming of the ladder with angels ascending and descending. And now, finally, Yaakov is coming home. He's going to meet his brother, Esav. The last time around, it wasn't so good. So, as the text says, he is terrified. And probably what we most remember from this parsha is the image of Yaakov wrestling with the Ish, the angel with whatever the Ish represents. And we might remember also that after he wrestles, Yaakov says that he will not let go until he receives a blessing. And when the Ish then asks him, "What is your name?" Yaakov gives his name, but is given the new name, Yisrael, the wrestler. And that's a very memorable story. It's probably, it's the one from which Arthur Waskow in our day took the title of a whole book, in which he reflected on who we are as B'nai Yisrael to this very day. So, and then finally, Yaakov and Esav meet, and the translation, I think, does a very good job of getting across the highly charged, fraught nature of these brief phrases with which the brothers encounter each other. And that's part of what I really want to focus on. It's possible to talk about any of those aspects of the story at length. It would be possible to talk about the story of Dinah and Shechem, but instead I think I'll just refer you all to the Task Force on Human Trafficking, as Rabbi Laura Geller says. That's one of our best responses to that story. After all, what is it that we can take out of Dinah's silence other than a strong call for us all to speak for those women who cannot voice what they want and what they need? We could go on in this parsha and think about the death of Rachel in childbirth. We could think about the death of Isaac, where he is finally buried by his two sons, and talk about what that might mean. And then we might talk about the very last part of this parsha, which is most of what we're going to be reading today, which, oddly enough, is page after page after page of the line, the family line, the genealogy of Esau. So how does this all hang together? Well, I have a few ideas gathered from my reading and my research. And as I thought about this parsha, I realized that although we could think about this parsha as, in its most accessible way, I think, perhaps, as a story of an encounter between two brothers who are estranged, about a story about their coming together, for me, what's always most powerful is looking at the parshiot through the lens, or through a lens, often offered by one of our Hasidic teachers. And this week, I looked at what some parts of what Art Green has called to our attention from the commentary of the Sfat Emet. So if you look at verse 33:18, which is on page 205, The translation says, Yaakov arrived safe in the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. But if you look at the Hebrew, it says, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov came, says the Sfat Emet, not just to Shalem, to wholeness, but to Shalom, to peace. Yaakov came to this wholeness, to this peace, after that wrestling, after that meeting with his brother. And what is it that this coming to Shalem or Shalom can call out to us today? Well, if we look back a little bit to that fraught conversation between Yaakov and his brother, at chapter 33, verse 11, just a little above where we were before, they're kind of going back and forth. Esav is shocked. What, all of this is yours? And, oh yes, says Yaakov, but you know, do me this favor, take this little gift from me. And then he says something incredibly touching. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, and you have received me favorably. So he says, please take my present, for God has favored me, and I have plenty. And again, the Hebrew gets us to something that I think is really important that I learned from the Sfat Emet commentary. Up above, when the brothers are speaking, Esav says, and this is at verse 9, Yesh li rav, I have lots, I have plenty. But Yaakov says, Yesh li kol, I have all, I have everything. Now, what could that possibly mean? How can it be that this man who was just terrified the night before, this man who has been wandering, who has accumulated possessions but hasn't really settled down, how could it be that he has all? The Sfat Emet, this 18th century Hasidic sage, says what this means is we're getting a sense of the difference between the acquisitive mode in which we mostly function most of our lives and days, and a mode of being that is rooted in the divine being, which is everything, which is all. When Yaakov says, Yesh li kol, what he's saying, says the Sfat Emet, is that all is really found everywhere, because everything contains that root of divine being and life. And that is why, says the Sfat Emet, we call God Shalom, because every point of energy contains everything. And that is why in Shabbat we also have Shalom, that way of being when we can feel, maybe if we try, that all our desires are fulfilled, that Yesh li kol, that I have all. That is true wholeness. Okay, that sounds typical. That sounds typical of the Sfat Emet, and it sounds very appropriate for Shabbat Thanksgiving, when we are all trying, in fact, to come into that place of feeling wholeness and feeling connection with the all. But how do we do that? So I went to two of my favorite teachers, Reb Yehuda Amichai, the Israeli poet, and Reb Ilana, my oldest daughter. So first, Yehuda Amichai. Yehuda Amichai has a series of poems called God's Change, Prayers Remain Forever. And this is the sixth poem from the cycle. I'm going to read you the first three lines and then the English translation, then the last three lines and the English translation. And you'll notice that there's repetition, and also it's pretty simple Hebrew, which means I can read it without embarrassment, at least not too much. Ikbot ragle tzipporim bechol asher al sfat hayam, kmo katav yad shemishahu rasham, lizkor Devarim, Shmot, Misparim, Umekomot. Footprints of birds in the sand by the sea, like someone's handwriting in a note to remember things, names, numbers, and places. Ikbot tziporim bechol balaila, nisharot gam bayom, aval lo raiti et hatzipor she it bia otam, otan, kach ha-Elohim. Footprints of birds in the sand at nighttime still remain at daytime, but I didn't see the bird who made them. Kach ha-Elohim. God's like that. That's the turn at the end. We can deduce, if we then reread the poem, that part of what Yehuda Amichai is suggesting to us is that we can talk about God's presence in the world as something that's out there that we might dimly be aware of, that we can project backwards from signs that we see. And another part of what Yehuda Amichai is suggesting is that, like handwriting, if we think of birds' footprints on the sand as handwriting, we can't read that handwriting. So there's something about God's presence in the world that is utterly mysterious. We can't see it. It still remains. But kach ha-Elohim. When we confront something, we can feel that presence. We can feel that connection to that wholeness. And from my daughter, the commentary on this poem, some of you may have heard this story before. When my oldest daughter was six, her father and I had gone away for a weekend. We had left her with dear friends who brought her on Sunday to Sunday school, but it was a weekend with no Sunday school. They dropped her off. I think she got into the shul because there was still a minyan, but she couldn't find anybody, and she was 6 years old and utterly panicked. So she ran out the door, and the friends had already left. And then she told me the story. A miracle happened. I turned around, and there was Rabbi Stamfer and Goldie's house. So she went up to Rabbi Stamfer and Goldie's house and baked challah with Goldie until we got back and they reached us. And what I want to suggest is that, yes, in the image of my dear Ilana, there is an image of seeing that wholeness, that shalem, that root of being everywhere in the world. But for us also, there's the image of Goldie from which we can learn, which is when a small child or a Dina or any other person who comes to you with need shows up, that's where we recognize the wholeness. And I think there's even some deep sense, therefore, in ending this parsha with verse after verse after verse of Esav's genealogy, because that's how we really know wholeness, by knowing the genealogy, the history, everything that matters to those whom we may have seen once as foes, those that we may have ill-treated, those who may have ill-treated us, those with whom we must find peace in this world. Shabbat Shalom.